comes to pop, not soda.
It's pop. Like this. Pop.
Welcome to Pot Not Soda. And now it's time for Brian and... Oh, damn. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to Pop Not Soda. It is episode 8. My name is Dan, and as always, I am joined by Brett and Brian. But not only besides these two, today we have a special guest.
Yeah.
A friend of the show, a lawyer, real estate broker, and a self-proclaimed jack of all trades, Scott Schindler. How are you doing,
Wrote
Scott?
My own Wikipedia page. Hey, guys, thanks.
Long Did you time really listener, do that?
First time caller. No, but I should now.
I would believe that you would write your own Wikipedia page, for sure.
Great. Now everyone has a great judgment of me to start the show.
Self-editing.
Call me if you have commercial real estate needs.
Brett, Brian, how are you guys doing today?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's another beautiful day in San Diego, but I don't think I'm doing as well as Brett over here.
I'm doing pretty darn good, man. We got Scott on the show. I'm pretty excited to nail him onto the show for a guest. But how are you doing, Dan?
Excited to nail Scott.
You're nailing him?
Yeah. Oh, well not on, I guess on the show.
Is that
yeah,
how
yeah.
you got on the show, Scott? You
Coachella weekend 2.
Woo!
Don't ask, don't tell.
We don't talk about it anymore.
What happens in the tent stays in the tent.
No, I'm doing fantastic. It is so close to my Vegas trip in a couple weeks that I am just counting down the days.
First off, let's not get in the habit of asking Dan how he's doing. Like, it doesn't
No, it's great.
Seem right.
The listeners love it.
I'm not
like
used to
hear
it.
How I am.
Well, let me guess, Dan, are you going to have that MacGyver idea like you had last year and you are going to stay sober for a couple weeks before you go to Vegas?
No.
Did that pan out?
No. Yeah, not doing that.
How did that work out last year?
We have our Royal Stumble pub crawl like 2 weeks before, so I will definitely not
Amen
be staying sober.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Brian, was there any like big local news, you know, with the Pop Not Soda team?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe someone in this room got engaged, and I don't believe it's myself
you
or
me,
or you.
So
that is right, ladies and gentlemen.
Because we're not allowed to get married in the state.
I am officially off the market. I proposed to my girlfriend last weekend, Allison.
Woo! Yeah.
So, yeah, you guys got an inside scoop on that.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, everything worked out perfectly.
Brett
and,
called his shot last week on the end of our episode.
I felt like Babe Ruth on that thing, kind of. But, yeah.
It was weird that when he said it, he pointed to the middle of the room.
Right. I hope she wasn't listening to the episode and then knew you were going to do it.
And that's exactly where I proposed to, the corner of the room.
Great light at
well,
4 o'clock.
You know, very happy for you, Brett. I wish you and Allison the best in your future marriage.
Thank you very much. We've had a lot of everybody. You guys have been very supportive and on the fan base, so thank you very much for that.
I know that you've been watching a show that probably teaches you everything not to do in a marriage, which is the People versus O.J. Simpson.
The FX special, yeah.
Whoa. Nice bridge. Wow.
So
I could cross it every day for my daily commute.
We have been starting that bridge.
Yeah. How has that show been going? I've seen a few episodes.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed it, but
I'll tell you, man, it's as much of a train wreck as it is enjoyable to watch because they've miscast a lot of people for that. I mean,
Really?
Really?
Well, yeah, who's cast it for it?
So they have Sarah Paulson as Marsha Clark. She's great. I would say Sarah Paulson and Marsha Clark is great. Who they have is playing...
Cuba's playing OJ, right?
Cuba's playing OJ. He is fantastic. They got Christopher Darden. That guy looks exactly like Christopher Darden. On the other side, they
Travolta
got...
Travolta Shapiro.
They do have John Travolta as Robert Shapiro. Oh, my God.
That bloated asshole is trying to... That's off as Martin Shapiro. Are you kidding me?
The dude from The Preacher's Wife is Cochran, John Cochran.
It is terrible, too. Like, by the way, it is absolutely terrible.
Is he at least good as Johnny Cochran?
Oh, Cochran is amazing. Cochran is amazing, but I would say, like, there are some heavy lack of acting anchors that are going through the series where it's like, man, Travolta as Shapiro, it's not selling. You know who's actually selling, though, pretty well is David Schwimmer.
Ross?
Yeah.
Oh, what's who's Ross playing?
Yeah. Hey, come on, Scott. Now bring it up, man.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Kardashian? Is he playing Kardashian?
He's playing Robert Kardashian. That's the craziest thing is I never thought that Robert Kardashian was the equivalent of Ross, but they actually are because he's so he's so oblivious of what's happening the entire time.
Because he's personal friends with O.J. Simpson, right?
That's what it is, yeah. And he's just kind of like, I don't, like, the brevity of the situation is so complicated, I don't even get what's happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, one of my, I think, favorite scenes so far from the show is there, it's like the beginning of one episode, and Robert Kardashian, a.k.a. David Schwimmer, a.k.a. Ross, has taken out all the kids to, like, breakfast, and everyone's looking at them, and all of a sudden, they show his photo on, like, TV because it's a news report. And they're like, oh, look, Dad, you're famous. You're famous. And he gives, like, this speech about how, like, fame is not everything and how, like, you, that should not be your goal in life to be famous.
Cut to the title card.
right.
The and then it's OJ. Two big, big middle fingers towards the Kardashian family.
It, I mean, they are really – which was what Allison and I were thinking about when we were first watching the show is like, dude, the Kardashians are popping up a lot where it's – I mean, it's somewhat convenient, and I don't know if this is like a favor to the Kardashians or whatever when you see it or whatever, but this is a complete middle finger to a lot of the parties that acted like complete idiots the entire time.
What network is it on?
It's on FX.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
And so, is it being done by the same producer that does American Horror Story?
Yeah, Ryan Murphy. Well, I don't know if it's the producer. I know it's the director.
Okay, so he's directing it. So,
yeah, he's directed a few episodes of that.
So this
is
the question I have. Did Ryan Murphy plant that knife that the LAPD just found?
Yeah, it just happened, what, a week ago?
Yeah, like a week and a half ago.
And it was a...
Wait, hold on. I thought that it wasn't just found. I thought it was found
years
ago. That's
what they told you. So here's the story.
Yeah, so let's hear the story.
Yeah, let's get the story out.
The story is that apparently this LAPD officer is retiring this year, and in 1998, he was working a like security gig
across on a Hollywood set.
Yeah, across the street from
doing a Lifetime documentary on the OJ movie.
Yeah, across the street from the OJ Simpson house, and there was a bunch of construction going on there where they were like demolishing a bunch of the property. Well, a construction worker finds this knife that has been buried and goes, oh shit, we should give this to the cops. And they're like, oh, the cops are right across the street. So he walks over, goes to this officer, gives him the knife. The officer goes, oh, okay, thank you. I'll you know, make sure this gets into the right hands. Keeps it for 18 years. And as he's retiring, he goes, hey, buddy, can you give me the case number for the OJ trial? I've got this knife here from the property that I want to get framed.
Well, was he waiting for like the right time to sell it on eBay? It's like Derek Jeter's gun.
I don't think he was ever going
to
sell it.
The weirdest thing, he wanted to frame it with the case number.
Yeah.
It's the same exact situation as the guy that wanted to frame the Stephen Avery portrait in Making a Murder. It's like, dude, well, what is going on?
He's a douchebag. Yeah, I hate that.
But I mean, it's the same kind of thing where it's like, what brevity do you think like you have in this situation?
So
like
his coworker goes, I don't think that's a good idea. Tells his superiors, hey, so-and-so has this knife. And they're like, what in sweet hell is he doing with it? Tell him to bring it in right away. And now they have it, and now they're testing it for
DNA evidence.
Fingerprints, all that.
Dude, that guy should get disciplined. I mean, you have a...
Well, he's already retired, so...
Oh, yeah. So he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
He's done.
In his robe, just chilling at 4
collecting his pension.
But it's crazy to think that, like, 4 years after you're demoing probably the biggest celebrity murder case in the 90s, and you stumble...
Oh, the biggest one ever.
Yeah. I mean, you stumble across something that's potentially a murder weapon, and you don't just address that right away, which is what I think is the biggest flaw right now, is what we're seeing in this...
It's not
the biggest flaw. It's not the biggest flaw in the O.J. Simpson case.
Yeah, you're watching the show. Like, maybe you don't know the end result, Brett. Yeah.
Sorry. I'm waiting for the Titanic to sink right now. So,
Brett, who did you say is probably the most impressive actor on the show?
Oh, the most impressive actor? Gosh, I'd probably say is either Sarah Paulson as Marcia Clark or... Gosh, you know, I really like the guy that's playing Cochran. Right now, I think he is a very, very good Cochran character where you can kind of tell that he is taking advantage of emotion while he's relying on fact, like minimal fact as much as possible. And they're even like what's interesting about seeing in the show is we've watched this show for 5 episodes now, Allison and I, and a lot of the stuff where you see the dialogue in the courtroom, probably the most unfactual thing about the courtroom scenes is that there's no camera crew in there. Because this was a completely televised celebrity.
I remember watching it.
I mean, like this one, it was 24-hour coverage or whatever. That's probably the most unfactual part of this entire series when you see the courtroom dialogue. Because anytime we've gone, wait, did so-and-so say that in... That's crazy. Because, I mean, when we talk about it, too, we'll talk about that in a minute. But when you see it, you're relying on facts and you're going, like, a YouTube video, dude, that actually happened. And that's what's crazy is I think we were at that age that all of us weren't really perceptive of the whole brevity of this case. And I'm overusing brevity.
No,
but I mean, like, I've used it 3 times now. I'm
that was on your word of the day calendar, wasn't it?
Yeah, man. I've
studying for the SATs.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, that's the thing is, like, I don't think any of us were aware of the impact that this had on society when it came to how we were growing up. I mean, what would you guys say about this?
I definitely remember watching it growing up, especially like my aunt watching us over the summer and just watching it and not understanding what was going on at all.
It was a 24-hour live murder trial when we were 9 years old, 8 years old.
I was 5.
Okay, so. Sorry. Damn it, Dad.
Still but, eating your boogers.
Yeah. I do remember, though, like one image I have is just the verdict and when it was like, announced and that he was found innocent, like NBC4, whatever, the LA station, just cut straight to like a camera just on a group of black people just celebrating somewhere. I don't know if that would have been the best like director's cut. Like, let's go live look at citizens of LA. But I know that Cuba has talked about how that was kind of just like divided amongst people watching this trial, especially along race, and that
it was extremely precipitated off of the Rodney King thing.
Oh, I yeah, think. Absolutely.
Like, I think that that
it was
is,
like the makeup call.
Yeah, and as much as I can sound like, I mean, I think there's an extreme race card to play in this entire situation, but it's insane to see that be capitalized on what like, I mean, when you see how it all plays out, I mean, it's mind-blowing that these guys took advantage of so many cards that, beyond fact, just influence people.
So was this was a jury trial, right? I really don't remember it.
Yeah, so it was a jury trial.
So do they focus on the jury members at all? Because that's one thing when I remember when I was practicing law. The jury, I mean, that is such a big component of what you do. It's really amazing that, you know, these big cases, it matters what these 12 people say.
So you have some insight into that whole lobbying and thing. Like, how do you, I guess, how would you select a, like, well, how, you know, what's the intention?
So I remember I was in a case where we were trying to get damages for a Southeast Asian family that had their son pass away because of some security gate closed. And that's all I'll say. And it was definitely negligence on the part of the property owner. It was midnight. There were bars still open in the complex. So they tried to climb the short gate and he fell and he hit his head. So our plaintiffs, our clients, were the parents of this Southeast Asian gentleman who died at age 30. And the defendants were trying to get out minorities who were Southeast Asian because they thought they would, you know, be more likely to side with the family of the Southeast Asian boy that died. Or do you have kids? That was a huge question they'd ask. So that kind of, I mean, it's a great system that we have, but then it made you really think, like,
it's all strategic.
Yeah, it's completely manipulative.
It's not really your peers as it's supposed to be.
Right.
It's a very, I mean, people spend millions of dollars for jury strategy when it comes to business.
Yeah, you're not randomly throwing pieces on a chessboard. You are strategically
pawning.
So is that
back to OJ? Now, is that a component? Do you get to see the jury? I never saw the show.
And see, so that's what I would say is, like, I mean, by all means, it's a dramatic piece. So I don't know how much is factually relevant beyond what is happening in the courtroom that we can watch on YouTube and see what's happening. But I mean, for the most part, you can completely tell that this was like a complete expose of race relations. Wow. In the 90s, and this was just, okay, one side is going to argue one thing, one side is going to argue a completely different thing, and we're going to see what side wins.
Yeah, that was volatile with the LAPD in the 90s.
Yeah.
In the late 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that entire thing was, I think, OJ was the the tipping point.
Yeah.
Is it a coincidence with what's going on right now?
Like, I mean, that's what's crazy. Is I was talking to Allison about this, too. Is like what's insane to think about it is you have like... When you watch the trial go on, and they're mentioning Mark Furman and things like that or whatever, and they're mentioning the bloody glove and how it was potentially planted and things like that, and how police have had like a bias against races, you know, for the early 90s and beyond that or whatever, and then you're seeing that nothing's really changed for the last 20 years. Like, some atrocious things have happened, and nothing has actually changed to, you know, increase race relations or anything of like any belief upon.
And it's tough, man, because I remember growing up too in like the LA area, and every morning there was something new about the Rampart Division of LAPD and the police commissioner being under scrutiny for that, because it just wasn't like OJ, but then you had Biggie being shot just a few years later, and a lot of corruption and a lot of speculation on the LAPD and just things not being done properly.
Yeah. So and gang violence is very, very, I mean, it's easy to just attribute it to. I mean, at the end of the day, like when you don't have the incentive to solve anything, I mean, just attribute it to gang violence, because LA is such a large area to do so.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a really systemic issue that's larger than just LA. Like, we can use LA as just a microcosm for the entire police system across the United States.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it is relevant that they made the show during this time, because there are so many, I don't know what it's been in the last few years, but I feel like there's been a stronger focus on police brutality against, you know, specifically Black people. And since it's such a hot button topic, it's... it just makes sense to remind everybody of this crazy shit that happened 20 years ago, you know, and it's just a cycle.
They completely divided
itself.
A country.
Yeah.
They completely divided a country.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you haven't checked it out, definitely go on to fx.com, catch up, check it out.
They've got
really interesting.
Yeah, they have 5 episodes in right now. I think they're at the point right now where they're, as crazy as it sounds, they're bringing up F. Lee Bailey, bringing up the N-word. In the case with Mark Furman. And I mean, that's a very, very interesting part when you see it and you're like, man, like this actually occurred in a case. Like, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, when
real life is always crazier than fiction.
You can't write it. You can't write it. And I think that is what is evidence of the show.
Yeah. You know what else you can't write, or I should say George R. R. Martin can't write, is the new book for Game of Thrones.
Woo! Well, it just takes some time to dish out these instant
classics. I saw a lot of
people,
rest in peace, George Martin, who was the legendary Beatles producer, because right. A lot of people got scared that it was George R. R. Martin that passed away yesterday.
They're not going to finish Game of Thrones. Oh, my God.
But if you do not know, Game of Thrones, HBO dropped the trailer for the upcoming season yesterday, and I just want to pass around and get everyone's initial thoughts on this season, what's going to happen and where it's going to go. Because I think that this season may be the one that differs from the books the most, because there's not a lot of material to go off of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to be... I mean, you're obviously seeing Cersei with her hair cut still off. I mean, this is going to be...
Short hair, don't care.
This is going to be a rugged road for Cersei. And Khaleesi's obviously running a rugged road too. I don't know what that scene was. I think she's coming back to the mainland with all the...
Yeah, I mean, they didn't give much detail. She just got
she looks like she's in the mob. So I don't know what falls out or whatever. She was riding a dragon out, which seemed pretty victorious. So obviously something happens. Yeah, in that. How about you, Scott? What do you think, brother?
I'm pretty excited. And for me, the thing that was most shocking last season was how Bran wasn't in it at all. And then you see him in this trailer, and he's grown up a lot. And... I mean,
and standing up.
Yeah.
Well, you don't.
Exactly. I didn't think of that.
It should be a vision.
And his scenes were so weird. They were the most fantasy, I think, of the whole show. And then for them to just cut him off for a whole season was brilliant, because it makes you really want to know what's going on in his life.
Well, I think
because he's the last heir of Stark, because Jon Snow's dead.
Yeah. Right.
do you think,
supposedly?
Yeah. Do you think that he? Because he can. What is that talent that he has or the skill?
He can possess other people. I forget what they term
animals
it.
Or people.
No. Both, because he possesses Hodor.
Which is an animal and a person.
Yeah.
Okay. So now this is an interesting question: is it only live people that he can possess, or can he possess?
So that's that's right. That's one of the theories because that he possesses Jon Snow. I think why they left him out of the whole season is where they got to in the show is where his story really arcs in the books, and so I don't think they were lined up with the other
the chronology, like the
timeline. Exactly. Like everyone else's storyline wasn't caught up to his yet, so they had to do that in order for everything to, you know, make sense.
One other thing that really upset me, and I'm not trying to upset anyone who's a very religious person, but there's religious, that group of religious kind of fanatics that kind of took over the whole, what's it called? Castle area. What's their castle called?
Oh, the church is what they were calling themselves, right? Like,
yeah, they're the church, and they like basically started running the show.
Well, I mean, that's what happened in that time period in the Middle Ages, right? I mean,
that
there weren't
time
dragons,
period.
But
this is actually real.
Period.
This is a documentary.
That's what happened in the time period.
I'm just saying. I'm just
Jeez
saying.
Louise.
It's probably just as truthful as OJ, the people versus OJ Simpson.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's just rallying the poor, right? Eventually, you know, you beat someone down enough. They're
you
gonna
do remember
stand
when
up.
The Clone Wars happened like 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's like.
That wasn't my history.
A long, long time ago.
That wasn't my history, but. No, I'm excited. I think you're going to need a lot more fights. You're going to need a lot more naked people, a lot more dragons. I know that Brian was very looking forward to
naked dragons.
The naked dragons.
I love me some dragons, and I love me some boobies.
But I know that everyone. That's just the tagline for the show, by the way. I'm pretty sure. But I know
that
everyone
great T-shirt.
Everyone is just
hashtag
waiting.
Dragons and boobies. We need to make that shirt for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Khaleesi riding a dragon topless. I mean, come on.
Boner Jams 2016.
That's the next show that HBO is releasing.
Dragons and Boobies. That's the title of the show?
Oh, no. Boner Jams
2016.
If that's profitable, they're going to release Boobies and Dragons.
So that's actually a spinoff of Game of Thrones.
I would love to go through who won't survive the season. I think that's a really good question.
Hey, good call. Good call. Yeah. Personally, I don't think I don't think Jon Snow's alive.
Okay, that doesn't
so
count.
Is he going to come back and then die?
I'm gonna vote Ned Stark then.
No. I will say that he is officially dead because everybody that's talking about it is
you're
safe.
Not answering the question.
Well he's already
it's
dead.
Like a double. It's like
well,
a double.
No,
negative.
No. I mean, did he officially die at the end of that?
The
coroner did not make a report.
Right. See.
He got stabbed in the heart 30 times. I think he's fucking dead.
Okay. Well, I would say I wouldn't be surprised if Jon Snow came back. The person that I want to see die, as terrible as it sounds, because I think he is probably the anchor of carrying this forward, is Ramsay. I
hate him.
I know. And I'm really afraid about him dying because he's what makes me want to watch every episode. As much as I hate him, he's what makes me want to watch every episode. So if they kill him, I'm really worried about this thing going south and me not being interested in it. How about you, though, Scott?
What's Joffrey's mom's name?
Cersei.
Cersei.
I hope she dies.
Really?
Oh, I don't like her. I've never liked her. So I go with her.
Okay. So she grow her hair out before she gets killed?
Maybe it's like a transvestite thing she's setting up for. Maybe it's a Bruce Jenner allegory.
Gosh, I mean.
Yeah, how about you, man?
Wow, it's so hard. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to die, quite honestly. But for just like throwing out a main character.
All right, I'm going to throw one random at you, Littlefinger.
Yeah, I hope so. But I don't think he's big enough. Like, okay. I think like Jaime Lannister.
Ooh, okay.
You know, like a huge character
okay.
that a lot of people like.
The Mountain.
The Mountain?
Oh, he's already...
How about, okay, Brienne of Tarth, Brian?
Do I think she's going to survive or die?
Die. How about you, Dan?
Survive.
How about you, Scott? Brienne?
She's going to survive. She's the woman hero. They can't kill her off.
Okay.
That's a very appealing
story. I think
it's a long season.
But I mean, we will see where this goes.
Yeah. And if you haven't checked out the trailer, you need to go do that right now.
Yeah. Yes. Do you think Drogo will die?
No.
No. Okay. Dan?
No.
No. How about you, Scott?
No.
Okay. I actually think Drogo will probably die by the end of the season. I think that's what's going to make... For me personally, I think Khaleesi's not that interesting right now. She rode the dragons off. I think you need to kill something with her story and then make her that much more interesting in the party. Then again, I'm the guy that says that Star-Lord should die in Guardians of the Galaxy. So, and yeah, I think we should kind of give that.
Fucking kill them all. Who cares?
I toss that over to Dan.
As long as Jon Snow's
Dan
alive.
Just goes like this, just kill them all. Just kill them all. So I think we're going to end it at that. We'll wrap up. We'll come back with... We got some things on the plate.
Yeah, Brian, you are reviewing Creed tonight, which is probably my favorite movie of 2015.
Ooh, okay. Well...
So be gentle.
Right. Who knows? I might hate it.
We are going to talk about the UFC outcomes from over the weekend.
Ooh, baby.
And definitely we are going to dive into 10 Cloverfield Lane and what that series has in store for us.
J.J. Abrams, thank you very much.
What is that?
We will catch you on the flip side.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talks.
Here comes the money.
Oh, yeah, baby. I love that theme music. That is Shane McMahon's theme music. And if you haven't been watching, he recently came back. But the reason why you're hearing Money, Money, Money is because this Saturday is the day, 2 p.m. in North Park. Pop Not Soda's first annual charity pub crawl, the Royal Stumble, will be taking place. We just secured the match card. We're starting 2 p.m. at Rip Current Tasting Room on 30th Street in North Park. From there, we'll head to Tornado. Then we'll head to a West Coast Tavern and end at True North Tavern. It's going to be a lot of fun. Come dressed as your favorite professional wrestler. And it's all in the name of charity, as we will be raising money for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. That is the Royal Stumble Charity Pub Crawl, March 19th, 2 p.m. in North Park. If you have any questions, you can find the event on Facebook or check our Facebook or Twitter page for more information and details.
Banana hammocks for charity.
Rolling through, steady patting them pockets, sell them second holding through. Ching, ching, bling, bling, catching cash and lump. It's a coral, get a jacket, I'm selling them out my trunk.
Sorry, too busy dancing over here, but if you heard that music, you know that it is time once again for Brian's homeless movie reviews. This week, reviewing Creed, and Mama said, review this movie. So I said, all right, Mama, I'll review the movie after you try and knock me out. So Creed, if you do not know, is a sequel to Rocky. I guess if we were to think about it technically, it's number six?
Seven.
Seven. Rocky, number seven. Rocky Balboa was number six. So this is number seven. I will confidently say that probably next to Rocky three, This is my favorite film in the series. It is stupendous. Michael B. Jordan, my goodness, he's awesome. He's, I think, really becoming a grade A celebrity. I think he's gonna take over these next few years as probably the only working black actor in Hollywood.
So he's going to take Anthony Mackie's current position.
Yes, exactly. I don't know who that is, but he sounds
Falcon,
black.
Falcon. He's
in, oh yes, yeah, of course, that guy.
He's in everything. When
see,
you go
he's
back
like
and look
the
at
he's like the action
Million Dollar Baby.
Right, right, yes. But yeah, Michael B. Jordan, well on his way. So, you know, not only his performance, but also Sylvester Stallone. They're both great. Obviously, Sylvester Stallone won the Emmy and nominated for the Academy Award.
He won an Emmy?
Yeah, for the soundtrack, bro. He won the Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor this year, and then nominated for an Academy Award, which he did not win. But I think if he did win, it would have been deserved. He was awesome. He was great. And you know, there's some things that happened in the movie that I won't talk about. But he really does deliver a knockout performance, if you will. And then Michael B. Jordan, holy shit. That guy must have been working out for hours a day.
In the womb. He had to start
yes,
really young to get
that. He was cast in this movie, went into a time machine, back into his mother's womb, and started doing push-ups and up-downs. Yeah, absolutely. No, he is just jacked in this movie. But you can also tell like he did a lot of boxing work because... You know, he does every single fight scene in the movie. He looks like he could be a legitimate fighter.
Is the fighting better than the original Rocky movies?
Yeah. So okay. The originals was
block punches with your face.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there still is a lot of that movie fighting in this film. I think it's more of like an homage and like a wink, like, hey, we're trying to make a realistic boxing movie, but at the same time it's Rocky, so they're just gonna start hitting each other in the face like a dozen times in a row and no one's gonna, you know, fall down. But all in all, really great movie. One of my favorites actually of 2015. I wouldn't necessarily say my favorite movie like you, Dan, but I honestly think it, you know, probably could have been in that best picture category. I thought it was great. Direction was great. Acting was great. And a really good story. And I hope that moving forward, instead of remakes, maybe this can be a new theme in making sequels. Like just bringing back one of the original characters. You know, maybe not Independence Day. That looks pretty terrible. But... You know, kind of this scenario.
It's kind of like a spinoff almost.
Right.
Where
like, just bring back a good actor, you know, from the original film and, you know, just like run with a new story.
Can you see a somewhat terrorist organization or something like that developing a boxer and then fighting Rocky?
Fighting Rocky?
Yeah. Or, I mean, fighting Creed now. I mean, yeah, shoot, like somewhat like the Russians back in the day.
Yeah, and Maria Sharapova actually is going to fight.
I mean, you could actually go Russian again. Putin's got a fighter.
Kind of, yeah, you could kind of go that.
Donald Trump, depending on if he's president or not, may have
he's
a
president,
say.
It'll right. be the Mexicans in honor of Trump.
But I thought the coolest thing was how they created. In the movie, like the whole point of you actually thought it was in the Everton Stadium, which was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, you know, a great movie. And to give my review, I'm giving it 4 out of 5
Ooh.
Quarters. Almost 5.
Full
almost
dollar?
Almost 5. Yeah. Full dollar. Bridging. I'd say that's probably as close to like 450 as you're going to get, you know. Walk away with some change.
Okay.
It's a great movie. Go see it.
So would you say, how much is Sylvester Stallone involved in that?
Oh, he's like the main catalyst of the story.
Okay. Okay.
Without Sylvester Stallone, the story wouldn't work.
But he's Creed's kid.
Yes.
Okay.
He is Apollo Creed's son.
And I will say, for those of you who have not seen any of the Rocky movies or you're not a big boxing fan, I know that makes me a bit of a social pariah. I still loved it. One of my best movies I've seen in the past 3-4 years. And I am not a boxing movie fan, and I've never seen the Rockies. So it's a very well done movie.
Interesting question. Does it take place in Philly? Or is it in a different...
It does. It's
okay, okay.
So he's... I don't want to like give it away, but he ends up growing up in LA and then moving to Philadelphia.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in seeing it now. Because, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean...
I thought it was just another useless sequel.
No.
That's what I originally thought, too. But, you know, reviews came out. They were really high. And then, you know, obviously I needed to see
it for award nominations.
Right, yeah. And a lot of people were talking about how it, you know, kind of got gypped at the Oscars. And so after watching it, I completely agree. You know, I definitely think Michael B. Jordan should have been nominated, and maybe even the director too, because it just flowed really well and the boxing scenes were really well done.
Did you know that was that director's, I think I saw it on The Daily Show, that was his first movie he'd ever written? It's amazing.
Directed or written?
I'm sorry, I think he did both. I think it was directed.
Oh, he wrote it?
Yeah, he wrote it.
Wow.
Yeah. And he directed Holy it. Moly. It was the first movie he ever did. He's a black guy. He's young. And it's amazing.
Yeah, that is.
Which is actually another movie that we're about to talk about. Another first written and first directed film. 10 Cloverfield Lane. Coming out this weekend. What do you guys think?
I am excited. I really enjoyed the original Cloverfield. Not because I... actually, I'm intrigued always by found footage, but just because of all the intrigue and not knowing what the movie was going to be about.
Yeah.
And this, I guess, ad campaign has followed the same formula.
And I guess that was a terrible tease too, by the way, but basically 10 Cloverfield Lane, what it looks like is a spiritual successor to Cloverfield, J.J. Abrams' movie that came out in 2008, I think, or so.
Yeah,
but it's basically a New York City disaster flick where I guess it's a recreation of Godzilla on American land.
Yeah, pretty much.
First-hand account of Godzilla taking over.
Like in the modern era.
Exactly, yeah, and things like that. So J.J. Abrams hasn't said that this is a direct tie to Cloverfield, but it is in the Cloverfield universe that's going to exist, which makes it that much more interesting, because I think when it first came out, everybody was like, I don't think this is... like, it's a shelter movie. First off, let's talk about that. It's a movie where I guess the first thing that happens is a girl has an accident. It looks like she's thrown into a shelter. John Goodman steps in, convinces her that something's happening outside of the world that may or may not be happening. She then questions that, escapes out to the world, and then that's where we're left with a question mark.
Right. And then there's also another guy in the bunker with her.
Yep. And he hasn't been teased too much post-bunker scene, so I don't know.
Wait, so this is the Cloverfield movie, was the movie with the monster comes or something, and then there's the disaster, and they don't really show you what the reason for the disaster is, right?
Yep.
And now this is... the people that survived and were in a bunker from their perspective. It's like the
we
Fallout
have
video
no
game.
They really
idea.
Haven't oh, yeah,
we
don't said anything,
yeah. So,
right.
So they haven't said that there's a direct tie to it. But got basically it. What he's saying is, I've heard interviews with J.J. Abrams about this, and J.J. Abrams has basically said is, what we're trying to do is create a Cloverfield universe now, whether that's, you know, tying directly in, or what we've talked about before too is possibly a Twilight Zone.
Yeah, kind of like
connection.
An anthology series where movies can be called Cloverfield, but they aren't necessarily completely like sequels. They're not completely related, but they're stories in the same tone and setting.
It's like a different take on just like that general alien invasion concept, right?
That or anything that just, I think, just terrifies you in the new millennial
Twilight
sense.
Zone is like I think the best analogy for what he was kind of alluding to, where
you're
getting
it.
Different Taylor like Tales of the Crypt, where it's under one umbrella, but like you're gonna get different stories every time, so it's not just like this continual same monster or a new same monster.
But on that note though, we've seen the trailer, obviously three characters, they've teased a fourth one which we'll talk about at the end of the conversation. But do you think it does have any ties to Cloverfield? I mean, do you think we're going to see the monster in it? Do you think we're going to see something in it? Because, I mean, there have been a few shots where obviously something happening outside of the bunker is pretty epic.
Right, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be necessarily...
the one?
Right. But yeah, there's obviously some crazy shit going on. Because even in the trailer, the other guy in the bunker at one point says... I was trying to get in. You know, they were talking about like potentially escaping, and he's like, no, why would I ever try and get out? Like, it took me, it was really tough for me to get in.
Oh, okay. And I haven't seen this before, but just like 2 days ago, they released a trailer too, where there is a girl, like when the girl's trying to escape or whatever, John Goodman is screaming at, don't let her in. So there's obviously somebody trying to break into the bunker too, that has just been released too, that, I mean, obviously people
existing
on the outside.
There's so many questions.
There are so many questions, and I think that that is what the brilliance of J.J. Abrams is. Is, I mean, he can leak any trailer. This isn't even his project. He's just producing it. But, I mean, the marketing campaign behind it is just brilliant.
Yeah, his studio markets very well.
Yeah, and, I mean...
Because even if you, like, the original Cloverfield movies and even, like, Super 8 was, nobody knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
He really kept Star Wars a mystery, too, honestly, with the trailers.
Yeah,
and, like,
definitely.
The way he did that, I mean... I would look at the articles every Monday when they came out and just be like, oh my God, analyze every second of it.
Yeah.
It
was
just awesome.
Yeah. He knows how to market any craft. And I think that what's brilliant about J.J. Abrams too is he never produces any product that's not worthy of watching. So any marketing campaign behind something, as much as it's teased, as much as minimal, you're that much interested in watching
because
it's going to pay off at the end.
He made Mission Impossible watchable again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he resurrected that franchise.
The third one after John Woo tried to destroy it.
Who would you rather have as a director? The guy that did The Revenant or J.J. Abrams? Because they're both so hot right now.
Damn.
So hot
right
now.
So that's a different story.
Alejandro. So hot right now.
Inarritu.
I think I'm going J.J. I think I'm going J.J.
See, just I would say it depends for me.
Because of the movie I want to be in, I think I'm going J.J.
How about you, Brian?
What's that? Debbie Does Dallas?
The sequel.
Dan Does Dallas. I would say it would depend for me. If it's Dan Does Dallas, probably Alejandro, because like, he would really
A bunch of long shots.
Yeah, exactly. Great landscapes.
Wide pans.
Yeah, but if it were... Dan Does Dallas, like Turbo Edition, where it was like really fast moving and
kind of like Fast and the Furious. A lot
of
cars.
Like you know, more of like an action film. Then probably JJ, because I think he would do that a little better justice.
I think we should ask the expert about this right now, Dan. Dan, who do you think should direct Dan Does Dallas? Dan is giving me the look.
He's
right
too
now.
Too busy thinking about
George
it.
Lucas, so you can just
Ben
CGI
Affleck.
Everything.
Ben Affleck.
Okay.
No, you mean the director of The Town and Gone Girl? That's who you're.
No,
that's who
he
you
didn't
mean.
Direct Gone Girl. That was
Ben Affleck.
David Lynch or whatever directed Gone Girl.
No. Well, I think we'll check that out. Gone Girl, I think, is Ben Affleck.
We'll get the
crack research team on that. Yeah. But that's how they always tease any Ben Affleck directed movie.
No, I thought
is
it was, isn't
never...
that Fincher? Gone Girl?
David Fincher or whatever. Because Ben Affleck did Argo.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's the movie with the...
You're thinking of...
Bye Baby... Or it's
are
with Kate...
Geely or some shit?
Gone Baby Gone.
Sorry. Right. Sorry about that. Semetics, sorry, Gone Baby Gone.
David
Fincher,
Argo. You can't forget Argo.
He won Best Director.
But they never tease Ben Affleck as the director. They always say the director of The Town, the director of Gone Baby Gone.
Well, I can't wait to see. Yeah, this is the question though.
So
has JJ won an Oscar for Best Director?
I don't think so.
No,
I would pick.
No, Affleck? JJ. No, JJ.
Oh, JJ won.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah,
he hasn't
so
been nominated.
He's. I mean, maybe that's why you go with.
Do you think he's mad or he's just like, I have money, I'm good?
J.J.
Abrams
is
directing. He directed Star Wars.
He's
like,
directing gold.
Yeah. Star Trek, Star Wars. I think he gets to have so much fun with the projects he does. He doesn't care because he also has his own studio, which allows him to do creative stuff.
The craziest thing, too, is, I mean, whatever he touches is gold. I mean, I've never seen him do any project that is, without a doubt, Super 8 is one of the best movies I've ever seen in the last 20 years.
Wow!
I will put my hands on that. Yeah,
you're gonna put your hands on it.
Yeah, I mean, I Super 8 is an incredible movie when it comes to E.T. You know,
meets Goonies, meets Cloverfield,
exactly. And J.J. Abrams just knows how to reproduce the feelings of what you were the films that you watched growing up.
Then I want him doing Dan Does Dallas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We have a 3-1 vote, Dan. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. We can do it.
J.J. Abrams.
So here's the question I have for you guys. Here's the question I have for you guys. Bring it back to 10 Cloverfield Lane. Do you believe that there's actually something outside the bunker, or is it just all in their heads? Is there an actual threat that John Goodman is being privy to, or is he just telling them that to keep them inside?
Yeah, I absolutely think there's something out there, whether it be just normal life or, something crazy, you know? I would hate for them to go the village route. And
no M. Night Shyamalan?
No, yeah. I don't need to be M. Nighted for this film.
You don't want a wide helicopter pan shot at the end showing the village?
Yeah.
Inside of a city?
Right. So, I hope there's something crazy going on.
So, I think you see the trailer. You see the end. They're filming it in IMAX 3D. There's obviously some big stuff happening.
Oh, good point. Good
that
point.
I think is the clear.
I think they just want to show up John Goodman's wide jaw.
Hey, because he got skinny after this movie.
Yeah, he did. He actually lost
a lot.
He's
trapped in a fucking bunker. You better be skinny.
But I think that is the indication that there's probably a lot bigger.
All right, so you're going for a big monster.
Not big monster, but there's obviously something happening outside of the scene that requires IMAX.
Scott, what do you think?
I have two comments. One, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the cityscape has changed. So I think that's really the cityscape, you know? They walk out and, holy shit, this is just all completely destroyed. But second, I do want to say, I can't hear John Goodman without thinking, Shomer Shabbos, for sure shit don't roll on Shabbos. I mean, I just can't take him seriously. Big Lebowski. So excited to see him.
Could you imagine being locked in a bunker with Walter?
Oh, with Walter? Oh,
that would be the absolute worst. Walter, okay, we're going to throw it around right here. Would you rather be locked in a bunker with Walter or Donnie from the Big Lebowski? Scott?
Walter.
Brian?
Donnie, because he'd probably die.
Yeah, Donnie.
Donnie? I think Donnie, too. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because you could just tell him to shut up, and he would shut up.
Walter would die.
Yeah. So.
Well, I think I will definitely have to check out Cloverfield this weekend. And I hope by the time you are listening to us, you've checked it out, or you're going to want to check it out after listening to us, because I think it's going to be great. I know that we have looked up the Rotten Tomatoes score tonight, and it's at 91%, you said, Brian?
Yeah, 91 with like 80-plus reviews. So it's seems to be pretty legit.
Yeah, and there's a tiny tease about somebody that is in the movie, but hasn't popped up in the trailers.
We'll say it's an Oscar-nominated actor.
Yeah.
Heartthrob.
Starts with B-C. Or no, initials are B-C. So we'll catch you on the flip side on that when you...
You can figure it out, Brian Cranston. Yeah. so I think this is a good place to take it home. But I do want to thank Scott for coming on. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
You're the man.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Man.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and do you have anything you'd want to plug or say as we wind down this episode?
Brett and I were talking a little bit about what I can add to this, and not much.
Dude, you were kicking my ass trying to...
But I will say that, I recently had the opportunity to take a 12-month period of my life and really figure out what I wanted to do, and... I just really encourage everyone to really go out there and find what you love, find what you're good at, because you'll love it even more. It takes risks. It takes a lot of negativity going along the way, but when you get there, it's worth it, and life is a lot better when you love what you do. And small things like this, small hobbies like a podcast, I mean, it's really amazing what it does for you. So thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, brother. Yeah, totally.
Hobby, this is my profession. Hey, this is how
I'm clinically depressed every other minute of the day.
Because you're homeless.
He's homeless over here.
Scott, thanks for coming on, man. Like, it was a pleasure having you.
Dude. Love to be back.
Yeah, you are great.
Yeah, we will definitely have you on again. And thank you all for listening to your weekly six-pack of pop culture. If you skip through our ad in the middle of the show, I talked about the Royal Stumble coming up. It's this Saturday, March 19th at 2 p.m. in North Park. We are starting at Rip Current Tasting Room. Come dressed as your favorite professional wrestler. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to hit up about four different establishments in North Park, and it's all in the name of charity to benefit the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. As always, I have been Dan. We've got Brett and Brian. If you miss us throughout the week, you can listen to our mini episodes like Brian's What I'm Watching or My Dirt Dab, or you can follow us on Twitter. Our Pop Not Soda account is at pop_notsoda. Brett is at Niece's Pieces. Brian is at BOwens619. And I am at Dan_Perez_. Also, if you want to get some sneak peeks of our episodes or hear some teasers, follow us on Instagram. We are at pop_notsoda. We put exclusive content, behind the scenes, and other things from the podcast on that account. So thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for coming on, Scott.